Game on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Johnny's for taking us through this afternoon here on 2FM. It is Wednesday the 18th of May. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Gavin Casey will join us to reflect on a historic day for Irish boxing with Amy Broadhurst and Lisa O'Rourke securing a place in the finals of the World Championships in Istanbul. Greg Allen and Doug Ferguson will be dialing in from Oklahoma ahead of the PGA Championship that tees off tomorrow. And in association football, Tony O'Donoghue will have the latest on the League of Ireland betting probe, while Paul Corrie looks back on last night's soccer as Liverpool keep the title chase alive in the Premier League, while fans of a certain vintage will rejoice in seeing Nottingham Forest move a step closer to returning to the English top flight. And of course, we'll be looking ahead to the Europa League final in Seville tonight. So, lots to fit in over the next hour. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there. It is great to have your company on this Wednesday evening, wherever in the world you are tuning in from. A couple of news headlines today just to get through before we get into the nuts and bolts of this evening's show. As I mentioned in the intro there, Amy Broadhurst and Lisa O'Rourke enjoyed semi-final victories to progress to the gold medal match at the IBA Women's World Boxing Championships in Istanbul. Gavin Casey will join us later for more on an historic day for Irish boxing. As you may have heard in the news bulletin just before we came on air, Gardaí have arrested 10 men this morning in connection with alleged match fixing in the League of Ireland. The men aged from their 20s to 60s were arrested in a series of raids this morning in Dublin, Cork and Limerick on suspicion of conspiracy to defraud. We'll have more on that in a few moments with our soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue. Sticking with soccer, the Press Association is reporting that Roman Abramovich and the UK government have found a legal resolution that should now usher through the sale of Chelsea Football Club. Trainer Kieran Cotter has been fined a total of €27,500 by the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board for administering cobalt to Slade Runner the day before his win at Dundalk in January 2021 and failing to maintain a medicines register at his Port Tarlington training facility. In badminton, Ireland's Nhat Nguyen beats world number 2 Hans Christian Vittinghus to move into the last 16 of the Thailand World Tour 500 event. And finally, from hero to zero, Biniam Girmay has been forced to abandon the Giro d'Italia. One day after making history as the first black African winner of a Grand Tour stage, the Eritrean cyclist won stage 10 yesterday, but went to hospital after popping a Prosecco cork into his left eye while celebrating on the podium. So for more on those stories and all of today's sports news, you can download the RT News app or visit the RT Sport website, rte.ie/sport. So turning our attention back to football, and Paul Corrie and first Tony O'Donoghue joins us on the line for more on the negative news story, Tony, surrounding the League of Ireland and this probe into alleged match fixing. What is the latest on that at the moment, Tony?
Well, it was a pretty dramatic day, wasn't it, really, with the arrests of 10 people in raids in various parts of the country because of this alleged match fixing. I'm up here at the FAI headquarters in Abbottstown. And, you don't want to name the clubs involved. You don't want to implicate people that may or may not be involved. So this is a story that you have to be clearly very careful with, because these are allegations, but the arrests are very, very serious. And I understand a number of current and former players are among the 10 detained. As you were saying there, they're all men in their 20s to their 60s, and they've been arrested on suspicion of conspiracy to defraud. Now, the FAI tell me that, you know, there'd be very strict sanctions for anyone found guilty, because they have a zero tolerance policy towards match manipulation, match fixing. But as we've learned in the past, this is notoriously difficult to prove. You might remember the case with the former Athlone Town goalkeeper, Igor Labutz. He won his case at the Court of Arbitration for Sport, and he was defended by the PFAI, who are also based here in Abbottstown. He was alleged to have taken part in match fixing in September 2017, and he was banned by the FAI for 12 months for breaching rules relating to manipulating matches and gambling, but took his case all the way to the Court of Arbitration for Sport and won. So it is difficult to prove, but I understand in this current investigation, bank accounts and phone records have been recovered. I think I know the games involved that are being investigated, but again, I don't wish to mention those games or those teams, because as I say, you could be seen to be implicating lots of innocent people in that sort of thing. So, you know, this is being conducted by the Garda Anti-Bribery and Corruption Unit. They're part of the Garda National Economic Crime Bureau. It's a very serious matter. And as I say, early morning raids this morning in Limerick and Dublin areas. And we'll just have to wait and see how this develops now. You know, the Gardaí have also appealed to people for any other information they might have in relation to match fixing or sports corruption. And it really, you know, cuts to the very heart of the integrity of all sport, the integrity of the League of Ireland and the competitions, because any change in results affects, you know, European placings, if it, you know, has a significant financial effect. And here we have, once again, I guess, you know, our old friend, suspicious betting patterns. You know, strange things that happened in matches, and really, it's a curse, it's a cancer in the game, and it needs to be stamped out. But obviously, this is a very, very serious development today, and we'll see how things move from here.
I saw, Tony, that the FAI released a statement pretty much saying that it's an ongoing situation, and they've no further comment to make. It was very short and concise. Have the PFAI? Has there been any soundings from them? And sorry, it's also, I think, important to note as well, this is from 2019 that the investigation started. So this isn't something that's happened in the past couple of seasons. This particular investigation isn't anyway.
Yeah, there were games that were played in 2019, several games played in 2019. Players were interviewed regarding these, you know, this situation in the past, but now it's gone to the next level. Obviously, when we've seen the arrests, no word as of yet from the PFAI. I mean, you know, we can assume that some of the current and former players may have been members of the players' body, and as I say, in the past they have defended their players, but they'll obviously look at the situation and see. I understand that, you know, the people involved can be detained for up to 24 hours, so we'll see what happens next.
Okay, very much a developing story. Tony O'Donoghue, thank you very much for taking the call. Tony, live in Abbottstown there. Paul, listen, before we get chatting about football itself, unfortunately, it's an extremely bad story for the League of Ireland at a time when we had so much positivity in terms of news headlines for the league.
Yeah, I think you're dead right, Shane. And, you know, Tony mentioned there that it's a very serious matter and a very serious allegation to be dealt with. And I think in general, you know, Irish football, like you mentioned there, is almost trying to create a new identity, both internationally and on a domestic front. And you know yourself, Shane, we have a number of great people, fantastic people involved in the game that give so much time and effort to make things better. And you see them around particularly around the League of Ireland grounds, both in the Premier Division and First Division on a weekly basis. And those people, you know, give their life to better the standards, better the facilities, better things for players, and almost work relentlessly for that cause. And unfortunately, there seems to be a select few who pull in the opposite direction to those people, and it those few people who can damage the image of the game here. And for me, you know, if anybody is to be found guilty, you know, there's no room for it. There's just no room or place for those people in our game, and you know, for those who take advantage of our league and who batter the reputation of the people who actually work so hard to make it better. It's not good. It really isn't good. Of course, they are allegations at this moment in time, but in general, it's just not a story that we want associated with our league.
No, it's a complete smack in the face for those volunteers who gave up tireless amount of work. One good news story just to finish our League of Ireland chat. The Dublin Derby clash between bitter rivals Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians at Tallaght Stadium will be screened live on RT2 television and the RT player on Friday, June 24th. Paul, moving across to the Premier League, Liverpool have taken the Premier League title race down to the final day of the season by coming from behind to win at Southampton last night. Of course, Manchester City will still retain their title with victory over Aston Villa at the Etihad Stadium on Sunday, but Liverpool have pushed them all the way again and ensured the fight will go down to the wire. What did you make of their performance last night?
Yeah, it was probably never really in danger from a neutral point of view, but I'm sure there was a number of Liverpool fans when Nathan Redmond put them ahead after 13 minutes who were sitting there thinking, God, this could be a bit of a banana skin, particularly when you look at the team that Klopp put out. He obviously had to ring the changes because of the toll that the FA Cup final had taken out of Liverpool and the injuries that they sustained. But I mean, once Southampton went ahead, they offered very little. Liverpool had probably, I think it was in and around 80% of the possession, and Southampton seemed to spend the majority of the game just chasing Liverpool, and that naturally enough takes its toll on you, Shane, both mentally and physically when you haven't got so much of the ball. And I think, like I mentioned there, from a neutral's point of view, you were just looking at it thinking it's only a matter of time before they score. The second goal was probably a bit lucky, but they did enough, Liverpool, on the night to get the 3 points. And you have to look at it and say that's a bit of a masterclass again from Klopp, able to rest all the important players, the likes of Van Dijk, Robertson, Thiago didn't play, Mane and Salah obviously didn't play either. So with the week that's in us, when you've got that important Premier League game and then Champions League final to follow, it's I guess important that they were able to rest those bodies up and hopefully get them fit and ready for the weekend. It would be a major shock still if Man City dropped points on the weekend against Aston Villa, but Liverpool have certainly pushed them all the way, and it's a real testament to them that they've gone to the latter stages, to the final of any competition that they've played in, and pushed oppositions as much as they have. So just an incredible achievement, and it'll be interesting to see how this one pans out on the weekend, but you would still have to fancy Man City, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would, absolutely, to be fair. I think, you know, not many people are giving Liverpool a chance, and in the Premier League era, every single team that has gone into the final day on top of the league has won it. Closest to bucking the trend was Manchester City by a matter of seconds in 2012. And the last time a leader in the final day failed to win the league was actually Liverpool in 1989. And a hat tip to Miguel Delaney on Twitter for those stats. The Premier League drama continues, so much on the line, and we will be building up to the final day of the season later this week. But speaking of drama, Paul, the gift that keeps on giving, the playoffs. Bryce Samba saving 3 penalties as Nottingham Forest reached a Championship playoff final, courtesy of a nerve-shredding 3-2 shootout win over Sheffield United. I suspect you were a happy man given your Sheffield Wednesday connections.
Yeah, I guess I was. It was a little different when Chris Wilder was in charge of Sheffield United because I played under him. But now that he's out of the building, I'm probably have to say that I am a bit happy to see Sheffield United. I guess I am and I'm not. There's a good Irish contingent still there at Bramall Lane, and of course we want to see our players playing in the Premier League. So it was unfortunate Conor Herrin actually missed one of the penalties, as did Oliver Norwood. And like you mentioned there, it was all about Samba, the Forest goalkeeper. He actually made an incredible save, Shane, with about 2 minutes to go to actually keep them in the tie in extra time and then save the first 2 penalties. And they went on to win from there. But it was an incredible game of football. Sheffield United did really well to get themselves back into the tie after going 1-0 behind. They pegged it back, got the 2-1 and pushed it to extra time. But Forest probably edged it over the 2 legs, I thought. And it's a testament to Steve Cooper, to the job that he's done there. He went very close to getting promoted last year with Swansea, and he took over from Chris Hughton at Nottingham Forest back in September. They'd actually lost 6 of their opening 8 games. So to reach the playoffs in general was a fantastic achievement. They actually went quite close to automatic promotion. And if you're looking at it, you would probably fancy them going up against Huddersfield and Wembley, and I think it's in 10 days' time. Just with the confidence that they have, the football they play, they've got some really strong players within the squad, and you know, you would probably fancy them to go the whole way. Johnson, the young lad who scored last night, had a fantastic season for them. And they also pushed Liverpool quite close in the FA Cup, if you remember back. So a really good game of football. It was actually probably overshadowed by I'm not sure if people saw it, but the headbutt on Billy Sharp after the penalty shootout finished, a terrible, terrible scene once the fans invaded the pitch, and I'm sure something that will be dealt with in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think an arrest was made as well, sort of identified the fan which is, yeah, unfortunate, because there was great scenes. I think Jed Spence's mom was on the fans' shoulders and everything, so it was really jovial scenes, and it was just ruined by mindless tuggery. My final question to you, Paul: Europa League final tonight, Rangers' first European final in 14 years, or their first ever European final, whatever way you want to look at it, face Eintracht Frankfurt, who last featured in one in 1980. How do you see this one going?
Really tough one to call. Like, Rangers have done superbly well, particularly against German sides. The fact that they knocked out Leipzig and Dortmund en route to the final is a great achievement. And their last season's campaign under Gerrard has probably stood them quite well when they got to the last 16. But it seems like Van Bronckhorst has taken them to another level in Europe. And it's a massive game for the club, because if they were to win today, that would put them in for the Champions League next season. Everybody knows about the finances that are at play there. But they're potentially without a centre-forward tonight. Morales is out, and it's kind of touch and go whether or not Kamar Roof is going to make the matchday squad and start. And that could have an impact on things. But, I mean, James Tavernier, who plays a right back, seems to pop up with an incredible amount of goals and some vital goals. And you wouldn't be at all surprised to see him on the score sheet. But that said, Frankfurt are very dangerous. And if you look, I think they finished 11th in the Bundesliga this season. But you can't really be fooled by that league form. They're very good in transition, and they rip Barcelona to shreds at times when they went through in that tie. They also beat Batiste and West Ham en route to the final. So if I was to pick one, Shane, I'd probably be leaning with Frankfurt. Just watched them over the last couple of games, particularly in the Europa League, and I think they were very strong. But, you know, a final, it can go either way, and it might just take a moment of brilliance to separate the sides on the night.
Absolutely. Well, Paul Corey, thank you very much. We'll be interesting to see how that one goes on the pitch, and indeed off the pitch, because Eintracht Frankfurt ultras have spent €50,000 on a display which arrives in 7 trucks from Poland. So do stay with us, because golf is next with Greg Allen and Doug Ferguson.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on.
Golf.
So, this year marks the fifth time that the PGA Championship will take place at a Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I'm delighted to say that RTÉ Sports' Greg Allen joins us live from the venue, and he has Doug Ferguson in his company. Gentlemen, before we get into previewing the tournament, it is unfortunate that we are talking about a divisive issue on the eve of such a prestigious tournament, but it's just the way it is at the moment. The Saudi-backed LIV Golf Invitational Series that is hoping to challenge the PGA Tour is making all the headlines, Greg.
Yeah, and with good reason. It's only less than a month away, the event, the first event on that tour at the Centurion Club in Hertfordshire. It'll have a prize fund of $25 million, which dwarfs the prize fund here, even, I think, 25% more than the Players' Championship prize fund of $20 million, and all for an event which will have a sprinkling of players from the world's top 100, a few from the world's top 50. By the looks of things, it's not confirmed the field yet, but it has been the talk of the preview days here. And this is something which isn't just me saying it. It's been confirmed by Paddy Carrington, who last week, incidentally, finished second in the Traditions event on the Champions Tour, which is a major on the Champions Tour. And he told me yesterday that really around the coffee tables and around the canteen area, around the locker room, nobody was speaking about anything else. I spoke about this to him yesterday.
It's all that's been talked about. I could hear every table at the Champions Tour last week talking about. You know, it's a certain amount of, if you're not involved, a certain amount of drama, isn't it? If you are involved, yeah, it's interesting. I suppose interesting and strange times ahead.
Rory McIlroy said that it's going to change golf one way or the other.
Clearly, it's not going to draw all the best players in the world. Ultimately, the European Tour is the one going to get squeezed the most. You know, it's going to go from being the second tour maybe to not. You could see a fracture in certainly rocks the boat, and then, you know, the best players only coming together at the four major tournaments. It does look like they're serious about running their events, and if they are, you know, you're at the moment we're talking about players who are leaving a tour to go to it. What about players, young players who have no tour at the moment, and they'll start off there coming out of Asia, or start off there from amateur ranks? That will be their base going forward. So yeah, if they stick at it, it's unfortunately in that sense, it is building and they will come.
Are you, detecting an element of that you're not that supportive of it?
I haven't talked to, nobody's talked to me from any side, in any good, nobody's asked my, I suppose I've talked to some of the guys on the inside of the European Tour, but in outside of that, I have no, I am firmly in the camp looking in. Like the guys in the Champions Tour, we were all sitting there last week chatting about it, and you know, every one of them sitting there looking in and going, this looks like it's happening and what it means. So I'm very much in that boat. As much as I'm probably high enough that I would get into it, I'm not in a situation that I have I haven't had to deal with the situation that if somebody turns around and offers me 50 million that I have to make a decision. I haven't been offered anything, so I don't have to make any decision, sort of thing.
Not even with your relationship with Greg Norman. And yourself and Greg went head-to-head in 2008.
Yeah, get on great, but we haven't discussed it, no. I haven't talked, nothing on a personal level, let's say. Some general stuff, but nothing on there. So,
are you disappointed?
No, I'm delighted. I don't have to make a decision. You know, it would be... Put it like this, it'd be tough in 5-6 years' time if I'm sitting there feeling like I've left 50 million on the table. That's kind of tough, isn't it?
Rory says it's toxic, that it's a toxic element. Do you feel it's a toxic element?
I clearly Rory's in a completely different situation than other people in this sense. Is it a toxic element? Yes, there's no doubt that the moral side of it has been the low-hanging fruit that's been used to beat them back, which has come back to bite them, because if they go ahead, you know, they get over that sort of thing, that in the end of the day, you know, the players who will go, I'm sure after a couple of years, will move on. It's not like my own country doesn't do a lot of business in Saudi Arabia. It's not like all the major sponsors don't do business in Saudi Arabia. So it's not like, as much as it's being used as a stick to beat those guys, and it is a big issue for anybody who is going. Clearly, you know, time will pass, and as I said, if they build it and players go, then the younger players who have no allegiance to anywhere, and you've got to think that, you know, plenty of Asian players, you know, that's where the growth is at, but young players will go there and know no difference. It's not like they have an allegiance. It's not like they've played the European Tour for 20 years and feel like, you know, they need to give back. They're starting off. So if they build, yeah, you know, it's a big deal. If they survive the 2-3 years, then it's becoming normality. In the end of the day, the only issue at the table here is, for the players who are going, because they obviously have got over the moral questions, they'll have got over that if they're going. The only issue at the table will be, do they get world ranking points and will they be still eligible to play the majors? And you know, for anybody to say, just go, we don't care. Well, the guys who go, all they're interested in is, well, can they play the majors? And that's the one issue that has not been, you know, that really hasn't been cleared up. So, look, we've seen the PGA Tour moved away from the PGA of America. We've seen the European Tour moved away from the European or the British PGA. We've seen, you know, the PGA Tour has got themselves in a position of incredible dominance in world golf over the last number of years. It'd be foolish not to think that there wouldn't be competitors in this world. It's, you know, the one thing we can be pretty sure of is that things we don't know about are going to happen. Strange and interesting, like, what is going to happen? Where is world golf going to be? Like, I can understand the European Tour when they turned down the PGL offer originally. They didn't want to rock the boat, but that boat is being rocked. There was pretty rough seas ahead, put it like that. You know, I think there'd be at least 30 European players who've gone to play that, you know, look for releases. And it's you're playing for what?
25 million.
Ten and a half times what they play for every week, and God, I'm not, my maths is bad. 12.5 times.
25% more than the Players' Championship, the richest event on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
you know, when you start seeing people turn up and who you're better than and they're winning $4 million, that would be hard on other players. I can understand why those 30 individuals in Europe have, you know, middle-of-the-road players have gone, gee whiz, this is a life-changing opportunity.
Just finally, you know Phil Mickelson well. You've been very pally with Phil over the years. I'm not saying, I'm not asking you as to whether he's been in contact with him, but the effect that this LIV proposal has had has already had a ripple effect in changing the face of a major championship, and indeed something very rare, a standing major champion not defending for reasons that aren't health related. That must be very, very concerning.
It is, because I think he should be here to defend regardless of his position and what he's done. Phil, he's got to own it and be himself and come out here and play golf. If by him not playing here, he'll never get this year back. I haven't talked to him. I did try. I've tried, but I don't think he's ready for that at the moment. I would say get yourself out here and play golf.
Well, Greg, there is a lot to take away from your chat with Pádraig Harrington there. I want to ask you, like, listen, you're an expert in this field. You've been around the block. You've covered many golf tournaments for many years. What was your reaction coming away from that interview in what Pádraig said?
Well, clearly Pádraig has given a lot of thought. I didn't expect him to be quite so forthcoming in what he said. And I think the most important thing is that the threat seems a great deal more apparent to the DP World Tour, formerly known as the European Tour, than the PGA Tour, as things stand right now. But that's not to say that it won't develop further. And this carrot of money, which is massive, and I tried to illustrate it there, that like the Players' Championship with $20 million back in March was the biggest payday in the history of golf in terms of the PGA Tour and the European Tour, obviously. And one single event on the LIV Tour, their first event, is $25 million, as will the others have similar amounts of money. And it's just going to be a nuclear effect on the game. And eventually, irrespective of whether the money comes from Saudi Arabia, which is toxic to a lot of people, Rory has used that exact word, money eventually, by the looks of things, is going to be the biggest threat to the European Tour. Doug Ferguson, veteran from Associated Press in terms of covering events on the PGA Tour and indeed on the European Tour to some degree. What is the ripple effect that it's going to have beyond European Tour?
Europe's a strong one. That's a good point in terms of competition. I think, I don't know, Greg, I need to see a field. I know it's close. I know it's 3 weeks away from the first one outside London. I think what struck me about Pádraig, did I say that right? Good.
Pádraig, to be exact.
Harrington. He speaks well about him being in a different place than Rory in terms of reacting to it. And frankly, we're in a different place than the players. And what I mean by that is I'm having a hard time picturing, and I know what they're saying, that if you see young players see some guy that even Greg said you can beat with one arm behind your back, picking up $4 million in 1 week as a prize fund, and within three tournaments he's already got more than anyone's ever won on the PGA Tour in a season. Do guys measure themselves by money? In other words, does a guy say on tour, let's forget the LIV, that I've just won, you know, I won $2.5 million this season, and oh man, look at that guy, won $5 million. I don't know if they think that way or not. We have to see. The young part is interesting, but I think if you're a young guy coming out of college or coming out of top amateur golf and you join up with the LIV, you're almost marking yourself. I think that part is still very real. And what Pádraig said is correct. It's a big part of the majors. Now, you can't touch, in my opinion, the opens because they're open. And regardless of world ranking points, you can always qualify. Masters is a big one, and we still don't know what Augusta's going to do. PGA, I think Seth talked, while the CEO spoke yesterday about you have to be a PGA member, and you can get that through being a member of a recognized tour. And so that's pretty easy to get around. But I hate the word legacy because I've heard it too much lately, but I think there's a lot of truth to the battle. It's money and it's history. And I think players are going to have to decide what they want to chase.
But does this not come down to almost the simple rules of commerce, that protectionism rarely works in commerce, and that if you start protecting your tour by denying players access to your tour because they've gone to a rival tour, irrespective of the fact that, you know, there is a loyalty element to the fact
that the PGA Tour has been good to these players. But you know players, you know agents. Well, you know, how much loyalty, how long does loyalty last when you've got $4 million as a first prize in an event next week by comparison to, say, $200,000 on a European Tour event or $1.8 million in a PGA Tour event? These events are just blowing those numbers out of the water. And eventually, money talks, isn't that the phrase?
Yeah, I guess it does. You mentioned agents, and that's probably an area that doesn't get discussed enough. I think from the Tour's perspective, if you want to play, you're more than welcome to, but you have to choose. In other words, so when they sell a tour and put together a tour, they do so by saying, here is our group of players, and they're required to play 15 a year, and here's our schedule, and here's our television contract, and here's all our corporate title sponsors, and this is what you're getting. And if you go and cherry-pick other events and choose to be on that tour, then you can't be a member of both. I think that's what they're saying. I don't know that it's exactly protectionism, but I think that's how they're approaching it.
This LIV tour is going to cross the shores into the United States, so it's going to be a factor this summer. So it's going to initially dip its toe into the water in June in the Centurion Club near London. Is there any anticipation? Like the European Tour do sound like they're concerned. Is there any anticipation of worry in the PGA Tour?
That's where everything was until Jay Monahan actually came down and denied the releases. I think in some corners, they thought that he would go ahead and give a few releases. I never thought so, by the way, but to London. But there's nothing in the PGA Tour regulations that allow for anyone to play in a North American tournament when there's a PGA Tour event going on. That's been around. That's just flat competition right there, and they don't allow it. And so we've always had our eyes, I think, on Portland. Now I'm really curious. I mean, I think there's a feeling that if some players go to London without a release, do they risk their membership or do they risk some kind of a penalty? And then if they go to Portland or New Jersey or Boston or some of the other cities, we'll have to see. Greg, I have to tell you, I still have to see it. I mean, you mentioned a sprinkling in the top 100. There's just part of me that, I mean, Greg has been pulling so many strings in certain corners of the media and building this hype. We haven't heard anything yet, and that's what's driving me crazy more than anything. I'm with Padraig. I believe it's going to happen, but I still want to see a name, and not just the name like a Lee Westwood or some of the names that we've heard come forth. I want to see how many guys are going to go play, and who are they?
Greg, if I just jump in there, because one man who does want to make the jump is Richard Bland, who says he will play in next month's inaugural LIV Golf Invitational Tournament in London. And he was quoted as saying, I'm going to play. If I get banned, I get banned. Most of my career is behind me now. As regards playing at the very highest level, I'm 50 years old in 6 months. I'm a realist. Mother Nature does tend to catch up on you. I have an opportunity to play these events and secure my future, and I'd be pretty foolish to turn that down. So that's a world number 48. Do you envisage, Greg, many more following Richard's path?
Well, you're looking at Richard at 48, Richard Bland, who incidentally like has had a classic journeyman's career until he was 48 and last year won the British Masters. And from there on rose from outside the world's top 100 into the world's top 50 at a time of his career when most players move in the opposite direction at a much more precipitous rate. So, you know, that's one player who obviously is looking at his pension fund and thinking this is the best way for me to secure my family for the rest of my life. And then again, he has to make the decision about where the money comes from, and all the players, everybody who does this, if they have scruples about where the money comes from, that's another question that has to be answered. It's not just the amount of money, it's about where it comes from. And Rory McIlroy has clearly said that he doesn't like where the money comes from, and that's his decision not to be part of it. But look, we've got a major chapter here, and this whole LIV Saudi tour has had an effect immediately on this championship, Shane, because of course the defending champion Phil Mickelson should be celebrating one of the greatest achievements in the history of golf by defending a title he won at a record-breaking 50 years of age last year. But he made comments to Alan Shipnuck in a book which is out this week. Those comments came to light in February. Most people know this story, and those comments were very unflattering about Saudi Arabia, and as a result of it he has gone to ground and hasn't spoken to anybody virtually. Padraig Harrington actually is pretty close to Phil Mickelson in terms of day in, day out on the PGA Tour. I've seen them together joshing around the place, and they're very, very comfortable in each other's company, and clearly Padraig hasn't had any response. So we have a tournament now, not a tournament, a championship, which is affected deeply by this already. So it's more than a ripple effect, Doug.
It is. I would say it's deeply to us. I don't know how much it's affecting the players once they step on a tee. I've gone round and round with a couple of them, even going into the Masters, which is obviously different from this one. Once they get a ball in their hand, that's all they're thinking about. It's the outside noise. And what you're looking for is players who are good at blocking it out. Obviously, according to Padraig, they're not very good at that on the PGA Tour Champions if that's all they were talking about, which I don't blame them. What else would you talk about out there except for what kind of medication you're on? So it has taken away from it. And I think part of that's proximity of calendar. In other words, this didn't come up at all. It seemed like this took a break during the Masters, and the Masters is kind of held in such high regard that that makes sense. But again, you know, we're 3 weeks away. It is closing in, and it's hard not to talk about it. I think every person that's come through pre-tournament interviews has been asked about it in some form or shape, and it's only accentuated by the fact that the defending champion is not here.
But somebody is here called Tiger Woods. So we have him in a championship for the second time in a month. He says he's better than he was when he came into the Masters in terms of his leg fitness, and we know that he has a very severely damaged lower leg, which survived 4 days at Augusta. He also said that he didn't really get up on Monday morning after Augusta feeling he could do pretty much anything. What do you make of Tiger's progress, the way he's been talking, and do you believe everything he says about how the state of his body? In other words, does he varnish it slightly?
Yeah, he's varnished everything. I mean, and maybe stuff that we don't even know about. I mean, you can only listen to what a player says. You don't ever know the scope of any injury or the scope of the amount of work they're putting into it. I don't say that to suggest he hasn't. I think he's worked his tail off, but it's just nothing that we see and can necessarily appreciate. So my thinking was, I didn't think there was any chance he was playing the Masters. I wasn't convinced he was playing at all this year. And so to think that he was in a cart on a flat Florida course in December, and then 5 months later he could walk 72 holes at Augusta, what's it going to be like a month after that? You can only see progress. That's the only logical thing to consider. But I'm not expecting much. I know he says that everyone was ecstatic that he could walk 72 holes, but he wasn't happy about the way he putted, and he wasn't happy about his score, and I get that part. That part never leaves him, but it's just hard to picture someone who it can never be the same as he was, age notwithstanding, by the way, and think he can go out there and have more freedom to make mistakes than someone like John Rahm, and then someone like Scottie Scheffler, or Jordan Spieth, Patrick Cantlay, on and on.
Shane, you might have a comment there from Tiger. Do you have it on your cart wall?
I do indeed.
Better than last time I played a tournament, so which is good. We've been working hard, and again, this I have days where it's tough, and you know, the days where we can push through it, but we keep working at it. I still have tough days, and things aren't going to be as easy as people might think, but I feel like I'm doing better. I'm having more days in which are better, more positive. Keep on going out there, keep pushing. I know how to play the golf course. If I can just putt well, you never know. It's only going to get better as time goes on. So as the months pass, it's going to get better.
Gents, we have a few more minutes left on our golf chat here, and just focusing on the PGA Championship itself and turning our attention to the Irish contingent, lads, and obviously Rory's going to be there, Padraig Harrington, Seamus Power, and indeed Shane Lowry. What are the individual targets for the Irish partaking?
I think with Shane and Rory, they are such realistic contenders to win that they have to be bracketed as, you know, in the top 10 to 15 players who have a chance this week. And when you look at the world's top 30 rankings, Shane is number 27 in the world, Rory's number 7, but really Shane is probably higher than that because he's gained so many world ranking points since the 1st of January. He's had 7 top 15 finishes, 3 top 3 finishes, 3rd in his last 2 individual starts, one of those at the Masters. So Shane is just in the form of his life, and I include the form that he went into Royal Port Rush with. And he's just so confident at the moment. And we can hear from Shane now. He spoke to me a little bit earlier.
Yeah, it's a fickle game, golf, and I always do go into every week. You know, I feel okay, but I always go in with a bit of anxiousness, and you've always got this, like, you know, want to do really well, but you need to kind of control that and just go and play your game. And I've had 3 weeks off. It's been really nice to kind of recharge and refresh. I've done a lot of practice over the last week or so, and I feel good coming in here. I feel like I'm hitting the ball well. I feel like I'm doing everything pretty well. So I just want to get going, to be honest. You're kind of, you know, weeks like this can get long, and you're kind of waiting until Thursday morning, and you know, hopefully I can go out there and put in a good performance again this week.
You said before the Masters that you expected to challenge, and you did. You finished third, and you said you were disappointed with third in the aftermath of it because of the chances that you had. Do you expect a challenge here?
I suppose you come in every week and you expect a lot of yourself. I don't come here to make up the numbers, or I don't come here to enjoy myself, because I expect a lot of myself. So, yeah, I'm bullish about my form and about the week ahead, but like I said, I just take nothing for granted. I feel good. Maybe I'm getting more older, more mature. I don't know, but it's nice. It's certainly nice. It's nice not to be battling out there and struggling. It's I did that for a while, so it's nice.
So every time you almost turn up now, you feel like you're playing well, which is a nice feeling. So when you saw Southern Hills and the challenge here, do you see this as a course which is fitting your eye?
Yeah, look, I think it's definitely a place that I can play well around, because like every major championship, you need to put the ball in the fairway and you need to hit greens, and then if you don't, you need to leave yourself in the right spots, and you're going to need to hold the key and crucial 5, 8 footers, 10 footers for pars at certain times, and that's what will determine a good week or not. It's exciting to be here, it's exciting to be in the form I'm in, it's exciting that I do feel like I'm here and I belong here, and that I feel like I'm, I can go out there and challenge this week, and that's exciting, and it is nice to be here and have all those things.
Well, you've been kept busy, Greg. You've been chatting with nearly everyone on the tour there by the sounds of it. Unfortunately, time is against us. We will be chatting all week.
Just to get Doug's comment on just who is his favourite and who is going to hopefully...
You took the question out of my mouth, Greg.
I never pick winners. I'm picking chippers, I think. So I am. I love Shane's hands. I always have. But... I think Spieth is going to have a good go of it, and I think Cantlay is going to have a good chance as well. Anyone who's, you're not going to hit these greens because they slope away from the on the edges so severely. I just think short game is huge this week.
And I'm going to go for Scottie Scheffler. Wow, the world number one.
I left him out.
I'm taking a huge risk.
That was my final question, Greg. We're going with Scottie Scheffler, and also I want a surprise each way show from the both of you.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll put you on the spot there.
That was quick for me. Daniel Berger.
Daniel Berger. I always go for Cameron Smith, but he's no longer an outsider running on the rails. I'm going to say this with great conviction, and not just out of national loyalty. I think Shane Lowry is going to have a great chance of winning, and you'll get him at reasonable odds. I just think he's absolutely identikit made for this golf course. And, of course, we haven't really spoken about Rory. He's not an outsider, but Rory has got a great chance here. He's just playing well. He's got confidence. That second place finish at the Masters, the way he finished, he's got his tail up. He really does. Spoke to him yesterday, watched him in practice. He just looks like he's on top of everything.
Well, I think a few others fancy Shane Lowry, because his odds have been slashed from what they were yesterday, I believe. Listen, Greg Allen, Doug Ferguson, thank you both very much for taking the call. Greg will be checking in with you tomorrow evening, and Marie will be checking in on Friday evening as the PGA Championship gets underway. So, Shane, for golf, we will be chatting to the 42's Gavin Casey on an historic day for Irish boxing. Stay with us.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on. Boxing.
So, Dundalk's Amy Broadhurst and Ross Common's Lisa O'Rourke are through to the finals of the IBA Women's World Boxing Championships in Istanbul. They follow in the footsteps of both Kelly Harrington and Katie Taylor, becoming Ireland's representatives in the final of a World Championships. Amy defeated her opponent Parvin of India on a split decision 4-1, while Lisa O'Rourke got the better of her Turkish opponent 5-0 on the judges' call. Gavin Casey, just how big of an achievement is this?
It's massive, Shane, actually, and I think it's easy maybe to get lost in the afterglow of Kelly Arrington's Olympic gold last summer, and even in more recent weeks, the magnitude of Katie Taylor's victory over Amanda Serrano in the professional ring. It would be easy for this to actually get lost, or the significance of it to get lost, to give it some context, I suppose. Like, before this week, Ireland would have had 12 World Championship medalists, male or female, in the 48 years since the first ever men's championships in 1974. We've had only 2 female medalists since the first women's championships in 2001, as you mentioned, Taylor and Harrington. And only 3 of those total medalists, Taylor, Harrington and Michael Conlon, have won gold. And suddenly we have a chance to bring that total from 3 to 5 on the same Thursday evening. And two women have not necessarily come from nowhere, but probably two of the more unheralded stars, and in O'Rourke's case, an up-and-coming star, have put their names in the hat alongside all of these Irish boxing legends.
Yeah, absolutely. Just focusing on Lisa O'Rourke then. I mean, she hasn't even won an Irish title at senior level. She's through to this final just, what, 6 or 7 weeks after winning the European under-22s. I was going to ask you a question of what an incredible prospect, but never mind the word prospect. What an incredible talent we have in our hands right now. She's facing an opponent from Mozambique in tomorrow's final.
Yeah, it's an absolutely remarkable ride, Shane. As you correctly point out, she's never won an elite title or a senior level title in this country, and yet she's in a World Championship final at the same level. It's unbelievable stuff. Now, she lost an elite final to Evelyn Nicaro last October, but she avenged that defeat in an Irish under-22 final in February. So that's how she kind of got the nose ahead of Evelyn in terms of selection for the European 22, which she went out to win, as you say, 6-7 weeks ago. And now she's into this world final. And like, she actually turned 20 while she was in Istanbul, which kind of puts some context as to how new she is, relatively speaking, and how quickly she's exploded into becoming this bona fide, Olympic prospect, we'd hope. The difficulty with her is that her weight isn't actually an Olympic category for the moment. And weirdly enough, she might actually have to wind up competing with her sister, Aoife O'Rourke, who was a Tokyo Olympian, former European champion, for the same Olympic spot. We'll see how the qualification process actually plays out there. But yeah, in a matter of weeks, she's actually gone from being a prospect to being probably one of the leading lights in Irish boxing, which is just an unbelievable development. Probably shades of Jason Quigley's breakout year in 2013, where he won European and world medals in quick succession. It's something similar to that. And also, I should add, she plays in midfield for the Roscommon footballers. This is an incredibly talented family we're talking about. Like, she's played in Roscommon's league campaign this spring. She's been playing for their senior team for the last 3-4 years. So, yeah, quite the athlete, and her trajectory is looking pretty good at the moment.
Yeah, positive for Irish boxing, perhaps negative for the Roscommon GA team. Gavin, just focusing on weights then, I suppose. You mentioned that Lisa's isn't an Olympic weight, and I'm right in saying Amy boxes at 63 kilos, but her preferred boxing weight would be 60 kilograms, but of course Kelly Harrington boxes at 60. And if we're to go full circle with links here, she faces an Algerian opponent tomorrow who Kelly herself defeated in Tokyo in her Olympic quarterfinal fight.
Yeah, you're dead right. Iman Khalif from Algeria stands in the way of Amy and World Championship gold. And Khalif, much like Amy herself, is probably an Afro lightweight, which actually bodes well in the sense that you would anticipate Amy isn't going to be giving away any size, any natural size advantage to her opponent tomorrow. It's funny, like, look, for a long time, Kelly Harrington was operating in the shadows of one Katie Taylor. And as you say, there is a kind of a cyclical nature to this. Broadhurst for a long time has been waiting in the wings for Kelly Harrington to move on. And there's been tentative challenges of her. She lost at 2018 elite final to Kelly, and after that Kelly went on to win World Championship gold, and there was a little bit of a rivalry brewing where I remember I think I actually inadvertently caused a bit of a war of words between them.
Inadvertently.
I remember at the time Broadhurst was saying, look, I have to pave the way for Kelly, I need to step back and let her go and do her thing at the Olympics and so on. There was only room for one of them, obviously. And I remember Kelly taking umbrage with that, saying, you're stepping back from nothing. You know, I beat you last time we met and I'm the better fighter, etc. By the way, as it turns out, they've very much buried the hatchet. Amy was over in Tokyo helping the team prepare, including Kelly. Actually, more recently, she was over in Connecticut. She's a southpaw. She was helping Katie Taylor to prepare for Amanda Serrano. So that kind of illustrates the pedigree of fighter we're talking about. But she was very unlucky in the 2018 Worlds herself. She fought up at 64 as it was then, 63 now. And she was robbed of a medal at the quarterfinal stage. So I'm absolutely made up for her, as is everybody in Irish boxing, that she's gone not only one further, but two. And hopefully she can go three further tomorrow. And imagine then you have probably, I mean, the reality is you'd have two world champions, or at least a reigning Olympic champion and reigning world champion, both vying for the same Olympic spot within an Irish team. It'd be absolutely spectacular over the next couple of years.
That'd be unbelievable. Unbelievable. Right, so those two finals are tomorrow evening. Amy Broadhurst and Lisa O'Rourke. Even in prize money, Gavin, unfortunately time is against us, but it's a guaranteed 40k and 40 grand as well for funding next year and a potential of 80,000 euro. And we have the men's European Championships in Armenia to look forward to on Monday, but it is all about the finals tomorrow. Gavin Casey, thank you very much. I'm sure we'll be chatting again on the rise of Irish boxing and indeed Irish women's boxing. It is all about Amy Broadhurst and Lisa O'Rourke. So the very best of luck to them in their respective finals tomorrow. Unfortunately, that is all we have time for this evening's game on. Big thanks for tuning in. Do stay tuned to 2FM because Tara Kumar is coming up next in a few moments' time and will be joining you tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. back here on 2FM. So from all of the Game On team, it's bye for now.
RTE
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.